I'm sorry I'm probably the only person, but I'm delighted that we've managed to make Skype work. And I have to say to start that my knowledge of pedagogic planning tools is very UK focused. Sarah and Marion, who are there, the tools that they're representing, I know something of, and Ronnie and Martin's compendium. But I apologise if what I say seems UK centric, and I hope that that's an opportunity to talk about other tools in development as well. James, can you move on for me? Are you still there?
Yep, just assume I'm doing it.
Okay, cool. I think going right back to where we started with the programme that led to the two pedagogy planning tools from the UK, there was a premise about teaching as being a human skill that could be enhanced by technology. And I think for me, it's quite important to hang on to the fact that although it's in close dialogue with learning, teaching is a different skill. And we could imagine that it might involve different technologies or slightly different viewpoints on the same technologies, perhaps. And I think that's important to hang on to, particularly sometimes the learning design community finds it difficult to think about teaching as separate from learning. And I think that's something that we've tried to do by thinking about how teachers' intentions need to be articulated and enacted. And obviously what pedagogic planning and design is all about is how we can share those articulations with other actors, whether they are other educators, or whether they're learners themselves who want to engage with those intentions through designs and sequences, or whether it's systems involved in the learning process and the ways we might try and make them work slightly more effectively in relation to our intentions as educators. Okay, can you move on, James? The next two slides, I apologise, they're quite wordy. If you were partying really hard last night, you could probably close your eyes for the next two slides. But the reason I put them in is I noticed there was a kind of a slash, a more version of the programme for this event between planning and design. And I wondered if other people were sharing issues we had in the UK about those two words, about the difference between planning and design. So I just thought I'd put up a couple of slides around my kind of reflecting on those problems that we've been having. And it seems to me that design is something that should work across a lot of different situations. And if you like, the design tends to be what we think of as our kind of creative educational intention, however that's manifested. But a plan is something that's got to work once at least. It's got to work once. And when we think about planning, we tend to think about different situations and perhaps about the constraints that might operate. What tools have I got there? Which learners am I working with? What spaces are available? That kind of thing. And in practice, there are different decisions taken at those different levels. Before real learners are enrolled in something, we can think in a much more open way about what's got to be learned. As soon as the real learners come over the horizon, we have to focus on the groups they're in, how we manage those, what spaces we've got. And then as they actually engage in them, we've got to start thinking about them as individuals and how they're coping with being challenged by what we're doing. But I also want to suggest that some of those differences are actually the products of how we organise education. You can imagine organising education in a way that those differences really were not very significant. And that in practice, plans and designs, as we all know, if we can talk to anybody, have to be very contingent and flexible, because learning is contingent and responsive and personal and so on. So there's a spectrum of design planning, or perhaps intentionality would be a word to use. Next, James. And within that, we need to ask, how do our intentions accommodate learners' intentions? So how does our curriculum make room for learners' goals and learning journeys? We need to ask what balance of scaffolding and flexibility is going to be appropriate. And I think that balance between scaffolding and flexibility is something we're all grappling with in the development of tools as well. How far do we need to design for learning, and how far do we need to allow emergent intentions as learning to come about within our designs? Again, when and how should teachers and designers' intentions be made explicit and represented, and when should they be really kept in the background? I think we've got to research which of our intentions are actually important to learners. We tend to assume that we know the answer to that, but I think really we need to think a little bit harder about that. And again, a major problem with anyone who's actually tried to program or work with a program for planning, what are the relationships among those different decisions we have to make? They might be logistical, or they might be very educational in terms of their meaning, like what's the relationship between an outcome and an activity, or an assessment task and an activity? Excuse me, James, can you move on? So I hope that those kind of thoughts were helpful. I didn't want to spend too much time on them, but just to say that I think those are issues we're all grappling with, perhaps, and the terms might or might not be useful to other people. Okay, to get back to the UK, the GIST has been funding two pedagogy planners and sort of indirectly involved in a third, which is compendium, through the Design for Learning programme. And I just wanted to give you a little bit of context about the whole programme in terms of the many things we were doing, which included looking at labs and women in a different context. And really we're thinking about design and realisation of delivery as a cycle that we go through at all sorts of different levels, from the very top level of course design, programme design, through session planning, to more local and micro-level planning and design around learning activities. And we've even done some work on learning object development with the thought, really, that this kind of educational intentionality, if it means anything, has to really flow through all of those phases and all of those kind of areas of activity. And I want to say a bit more about the planning tools we've developed, but only briefly, and then sort of be able to reflect on what we've learned next few shows. So there are two pedagogical planning tools that the GIST has funded. I don't want to say too much about them because I know you're going to be talking about different tools later on. But I think the contrast and the complementarity between them have been quite interesting. And it's important to say we didn't fund these tools to go into kind of production. We funded them very much as testable prototypes. And what I want to talk about a little bit is how they've exposed some of the challenges in doing this thing that we're calling pedagogic planning, and how they've gathered some requirements in relation to those challenges. Next, please, James. So the two planners have these slightly different approaches, although they've been working very closely together. There are slightly different approaches and focuses in what they're doing, which I think it's interesting to tease out, because I think we probably could all agree that no one tool could do everything that we need in this particular problem space. So it's interesting that, for example, the London Pedagogy Planner seems to be really more about regular session and course of planning. It's something you would imagine teachers, educators, design teams turning on when they have to do that task. Phoebe seems to be more focused, or particularly it's been taken up more enthusiastically in relation to things like initial teacher training, continuing professional development. So it's when teachers perhaps have some extra time or some extra incentive or extra support to reflect and think about what they're doing. And perhaps in relation to that, the reflection tends to run alongside the design process. The guidance is a separate linked system, whereas in the London Planner, the support for decision-making is scaffolded and built into the computational model. So there's two slightly different ways of doing this design and guidance for design thing. Again, I think educational planning is supposed to be built in with the London Planner, but they're very fluid in Phoebe. They could be redesigned and owned and repurposed by different communities. So the decision-making process is very carefully scaffolded and supported with the London Planner, whereas Phoebe allows a lot of flexibility in its planning. And I think there's some interesting differences there, as well as some commonalities that it might be worth exploring in relation to other tools that are here today. Next, please, James. Okay, I'm going to go very briefly through, because we're really talking about the high-level names of these planners here, and Diana Lorillard, it articulated to me her kind of main aim for the London Pedagogy Planner in these terms, which I